I felt the Lord lay something on my heart, and it's actually born from a burden that has been growing within my heart for several years now, at the very least, perhaps longer. But I desperately want people to succeed in the body of Christ. Now, that may seem like a strange thing to say. You say, well, of course, you know, people come to Christ, they have all the advantages that Christ offers, and they should succeed. But the unfortunate reality is that many people don't succeed in their walk with Christ. In fact, to tell you the truth, the world is trying to abolish this word failure. Don't believe it, because people fail. They say everybody's a winner in some way. Well, yeah, I appreciate that. I think that's a generous thing to say. But the reality is, people who did not set out to fail, fail. And so over the years, it has interested me enough that I began to be aware of it. I began to be conscious of it. And I'll be honest with you, you know, over a period of time, you know, there's an ache that kind of grows in your heart as you remember people who once were on the path who have gotten off. And, you know, you could look and you could analyze, you could come up with many, many different reasons to why people did get off the path, but really at the end of the day, there's only one reason why people get off the path, and it starts at your age and even younger, and that is people begin to make bad choices, and those bad choices are what eventually lead them off the path. Now, there are contributing factors, and we're going to look at a couple of contributing factors here, but I desperately want every single one of you to be successful. I desperately want that. I desperately want that. I want that for my life. I want that for my family, for my children. But the reality is this here. I was in, I think it was Central America, and I was preaching there. And this thought came into my mind, which didn't please me at all. Nevertheless, it came into my mind, and it was that I know far more people today who have gotten off the path than I know people who are still on it. And you know, it all boils down to choices that we make. I know at your age group, parents are always concerned. They always say, make right choices, do right things, right? There's a reason why they say that. And that's because many times people don't make right choices and they don't do the right things. And part of the problem that exists, and I suppose it's more of a problem for those that are younger than it is for someone my age, because I am quite old. After a period of time, you really don't care much what people think. But when you're younger, you do. You care a great deal. When you get older, you know, somehow you just kind of say what you think is right. Well, people just have to kind of deal with it. And the more hair that turns gray and the more hair that you lose, the more they seem to listen. So it kind of works for me. Didn't work when I was younger, but it works now. But it really does boil down to wrong priorities, wrong decisions that are made as a result of those wrong priorities. As I mentioned, the world is trying very hard to abolish this word failure. But I really believe, you know, that the best news is the right news. It's the true news. It's the true story is the best story. And the reality is this. People do fail. People fail all of the time. Not everybody's a winner. There are losers. And, you know, as I said, I used to hear Pastor Bailey say this many, many times, and, you know, you appreciate what he's saying, but you can't fully understand the context that he's saying it. But he would say, at the time he was saying it, he said, I'm an older man, and I've walked with a lot of people, and people that were more gifted than I was, people more talented than I was, and yet today they're off course, and I'm still here, you know, because of God's grace. Well, that's somehow stuck with me. And now, unfortunately, I'm getting to the age where I say the same thing. There were people in my life, in my church, who when I was growing up, I said, if I could be half as spiritual as they are, I'd feel as though my life really meant something. And yet, for many of those people, they're not even serving Christ anymore. They're not even serving the Lord anymore. And there's always, always a cause. In my secular occupation, one of the things that I'm responsible for is making companies explain what went wrong and what was the root cause of it. Why did it go wrong? Because until you understand what went wrong, you can't really truly fix it. And so I go in and I audit them and I say, this is broken, this is broken, this is broken. And then they have to submit to me documentation that says, this is why it broke. And so over the years, my mind has drifted in that direction. And I say, Lord, why are people's relationship with Christ broke? Why do we start out with beautiful families and beautiful children who are coming to church, smiling with their parents, and then by the time they get to be adults, you know, they're barely serving the Lord at all? What's the root cause? What's the breakdown on it? And I think that one of the things that we have to conclude is people are making wrong choices. They're making bad decisions. And those bad decisions generally are relative to, you know, wrong priorities. I know that for young folks, as I said, being with the popular crowd and being popular is considered a good thing. And that's kind of where the whole thing kind of goes awry, because what does popularity mean? What does it mean to be the popular guy or the popular gal or to be with the popular crowd? What does that really mean? Well, it means you're with somebody who is respected, somebody who is acknowledged as being a leader or whatever. But many times what we value as important as it is relative to popularity is wrong. And I want to give you a few examples from the scriptures, because many times we get it wrong about who we should admire and who we should look up to and the people that we should emulate. And I want to consider with you, first and foremost, Saul. Now, what's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of Saul? You're like, well, he was a mess up. He really messed up. He really did. Well, that's because we know the end of the story. We know the end of the story, and we know that Saul messed up. But in the beginning, it wasn't so. Saul was the popular guy. He was charming. He was handsome. He was head and shoulders above everyone else. And everybody certainly said, if anyone's going to make it, Saul's going to make it. Because Saul, a charming guy. And so in 1 Samuel chapter 9 and verse 2, let me read this for you. It's speaking of Saul's father here. And he had a son whose name was Saul, a choice young man and a goodly. And there was not among the children of Israel a goodlier person. Now, we know that that's bad English, right? A goodlier person. That's kind of an Andersonism. I would use a word like that. A goodlier person. There was no goodlier person than he. From his shoulders and upward, he was higher than any of the people. And so Saul was popular. He was charming. He was handsome. And when he walked into a room, people noticed him because he was the popular guy. But there was something inside of Saul's heart that was going to make him go awry. It was going to make him go off course. And now we look at Saul as one of the fools of Israel, one of the kings who didn't make it. But in the beginning, it wasn't apparently so. After all, he was promoted to king. I guess that's, I think as far as the hierarchical structure, that's about as high as you can get. He became the king because of everyone's admiration for him. But there's something wrong in this man. And this is what I'm getting at here. You know, who do we admire? Saul was admired by the entire nation. He was admired. But who do we admire? And what is really going on inside their heart? Because inside of Saul's heart was rebellion, was disobedience, you know, not walking in the commandments of God. And yet he was admired. He was a man. Now, Israel is a religious state, right? You think they would have thought about the law of Moses, about the commandments and all of these things, and they'd want a leader who was compliant with those things. But Saul was none of that, and yet he was admired. As I am exposed to the younger crowds, though very few will admit it publicly, secretly they admire people, and sometimes they admire the wrong people. And so Saul would have been the wrong person. We know from 2 Samuel chapter 15, verse 24 to 28, and Saul said unto Samuel, I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord and thy words, because I feared the people and obeyed their voice. Now therefore I pray thee, pardon my sin and turn again with me, that I may worship the Lord. And Samuel said unto Saul, I will not return with thee, for thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord hath rejected thee. And so all of Israel began to admire a man whose lifestyle was abhorrent to God. I think that that's an extraordinary thing that took place. And so we have this man who was charming and admired by the nation, And yet he was rejected of God. But then as we turn to someone else, we turn to John the Baptist. Now, John the Baptist actually lived the life of a hermit, studying the scriptures quietly in the wilderness. He wasn't the popular guy. I mean, if you're eating wild locusts and honey, I doubt that you're being invited to the posh banquets of the day. And so he's in obscurity, living his life in obscurity, studying the scriptures, and he came out of obscurity when he was to announce, you know, the entrance of Christ, the ministry of Christ. And he preached for about 18 months, and then they cut his head off. Some people might say he died in his 30s. He lived in obscurity all alone by himself. And then he ministered for 18 months, and they cut off his head. What a waste of a life. What a waste of a ministry. And yet, what did Jesus say in Matthew 11, verse 11? He said, "Verily I say unto you, among them that are born of women, there hath not risen a greater than John the Baptist." There hasn't been anyone greater in the eyes of God than John the Baptist, of all those that were risen among women. And so the point to those two illustrations is, it matters who we admire. It matters what we admire. Saul was head and shoulders above everyone else. He was charming. He was handsome. And yet he was rebellious. He was disobedient. He didn't obey the commandment of the Lord. In fact, to be quite honest with you, the only thing he cared about was his reputation. When Samuel chided him, he said, I did just transgress the commands. But I'll tell you what, would you do me a favor? Just let me repent, and then when I go back to worship the Lord, follow me so that the people know that you're still behind me. He didn't care anything about what God said. And you know what I see? What I see many times with young people is that they're attaching themselves to the wrong people. They're popular, they're attractive, they're handsome, perhaps, they're pretty, popular, and yet the commandments of God are the farthest thing from their mind. I'm talking about in the church. We're not using the world as an example here. I'm talking about in the church. But yet, you know, who should we admire? We should admire those who fear the Lord. They should be our heroes. They should be the people that we look to. They should be the people that we emulate. And so the world has a very skewed idea about value structure, about core values, right? In the world, if you're successful and you're popular, then you're good. Now, I know, at least I hope I know, that you guys aren't using the world as your template to govern your lives. I'm not trying to speak down to you by saying that. I'm simply saying that mankind as a whole, whether you're young or whether you're old, tend to migrate to the wrong things. Tend to admire the wrong things. John the Baptist, that guy? I mean, he's out in the wilderness eating wild locusts and honey. He's the guy you want to follow? But he's keeping the commandments, and he absolutely fulfilled the purpose of God. And God said of him, that of them, all the men that were raised from among women, none was greater than him. Well, that's the accolade that you want. That's the admiration that you want. You know, I didn't get saved until my senior year in high school. If there's a strategy for disaster, get saved your senior year in high school. After you've lived your entire school career in the world, making worldly friends, doing worldly things, highlight your senior year by changing it all, getting saved, and telling people about Jesus and telling them they're going to hell. That'd make you real popular. You'd be the real popular guy. That's the kind of guy they stick in the locker and, you know, throw snowballs at him, whatever. So, failure is an option. And I hesitate whether I should say this or not, but I'm going to say it. Generally speaking, when you have to premise your statement by saying that, you probably shouldn't say it, but I'm going to say it. Some of you folks, in 20 years from today, where will you be? What will be the choices that you make? Statistics are not encouraging. Now, why do I say that? It's because I want to make an impression with the words I'm saying, because I desperately want you to succeed. People that have wrong priorities and people that make bad choices don't make it. I've seen it. I've been in the kingdom of God now for 40 years, and I've seen things play out. And I was just talking this morning to my pastor, and I said, you know, Pastor Dan, I live with an ache in my spirit. I have the joy, I have the peace of God, but I live with an ache. And the ache is this: how many people I know that have gone off the path? And they all start, you know, when they're young. They all start when they're young, making bad choices, making bad decisions. And so We're not just going to look at the bad choices, by the way, folks. We're going to look at the good choices, too. We're going to look at the good stuff, too. We're going to do the negative stuff first. I had a man in my church one time. He said, Pastor, you should never get up and preach a negative message. They should all be positive. They should all be good. To which I replied, and they're not? All of my messages aren't good? Well, that kind of put him on the spot. But the thing is this here. You know, if you know anything about a battery, your car won't start unless you hook up the negative and the positive. You got to have both to have a full circuit. So we're going to look at the bad stuff first, the bad choices first. But I want to end the message this afternoon talking about how we can avoid all of this and how, you know, we should put ourselves, what posture we should put ourselves in so that we can avoid all of this. As I mentioned, there are many contributing factors for why people fail. But ultimately, there's really only one reason. There's contributing factors, but there's really only one reason. And please listen to me. There's really only one reason. That is because that person has a habit of making bad choices. Bad choices. Bad choices. Many contributing factors, and we're going to look at three contributing factors. But all of these contributing factors only lead up to one thing. These contributing factors will cause people to make bad choices. Now listen to me carefully. Young men and women are future ministers of tomorrow. There's no way that a person can make a habit of making bad choices and still make it. It doesn't work that way. Bad choices take people out of the race. I think that many times over the years I've drawn this conclusion here. I haven't come this far in the kingdom, however far that is. I haven't come this far in the kingdom because I possessed any particular talents, because I possess any particular charms. The only reason I made it this far in the kingdom is because I cry well. I weep well. I sorrow over the things, you know, that I see in my heart that could take me off the path. I used to tell the girls this all the time. My girls, you know, growing up with a father as a preacher, some of you know what I'm talking about. You get micro sermons on a regular basis. I told the girls while they were growing up, I love you, you do many things well, but we're not going to focus on those things. We're going to focus on the bad things because those are the things that take you off course. The rich young ruler, all these things have I done from my youth. What lack I yet? Well, it was that one thing that he lacked that was the only thing that mattered. So, you know, we ought to focus in on the negative things and ask God to help us with those. Many contributing factors for why people fail, but ultimately there's only one reason, and that's bad decisions, people making bad decisions. And the reason why people make bad decisions many times, again, is because their priority structures are completely wrong. They admire things they should admire, and they don't admire things that they should. That's not relative to youth, by the way. That's relative to a 70, 80, 90-year-old man. It's relative to everyone. So I summarize because, well, I don't think they want me to preach for 2 hours, and I doubt that you want me to do that as well. So I summarize it to three main things. And these are things that are not from a book that I read. These are not things that are from, you know, some lofty idea that I sat in my room and thought up. These are things that I saw play out. These are things that I've seen play out. And number one is number one for a reason, and that's because it seems to be the number one reason why people get led astray. And the first one is bad friends, bad acquaintances. Bad acquaintances. This is huge. You know, who we ally ourselves with, who we align ourselves with, and those that we choose to run with and those that we choose to be with will have a major bearing on our lives. In my day, when I was growing up, my parents used to say, birds of a feather flock together. Have you ever heard that one before? Yeah, I see a lot of heads nodding. I'm sure you have. But you know what I found out over the years? It's true. It is true. Sometimes, I guess I'll describe them this way. Sometimes a no good comes into your church, somebody who's a troublemaker, somebody who's rebellious, and you're amazed at times to see who gravitates to them. You're amazed. And you're thinking, why? Where's the alignment here? And then as time progresses, you begin to realize that person came into the church to take other people out because those people had the same thing in their hearts that this person did. And so friends are huge. Activities, bad activities. I can think off the top of my head right now probably about a dozen young men and young women that used to attend the conventions here, used to sit where you sat, and they're no longer in the kingdom. And yet, during that time that they're at the convention, you know, instead of seeking the Lord and praying, and I'm not saying you come here and go on your face before God and you stay there until you leave, you come here to socialize and have a good time with your friends and so forth. But it's astounded me over the years what some of the youth found to be a good outlet. Bad activities, things that I would even say were unchristian activities taking place during a convention. And so bad activities, we'll talk about that for a moment. And then the third one, which almost could be the first one, has to do with bad attitudes. Bad attitudes. Those who fall prey to these things, you know, they're just not going to succeed. And as I said, I want you guys to succeed. I want to succeed myself, and I want everybody in this place to succeed. I have a desperate need to see Christians make good. And it's getting more desperate as time goes on. And I'll say this here, that each of these three things, bad friends, bad activities, bad attitudes, the enemy loves all of them. He loves them all. He relishes in them. And when he sees that happening, oh, he's happy. He's a happy man. Because that's the fodder that he can work with. Those are where his tools work best. So I want to just go through these briefly. And as I said, we're not going to just have a negative message. We're going to get into ways to avoid it as well and ways to be successful. Bad friends, bad friends. Do you respect your friends or do you seek their friendship because they're popular? Well, there are a whole nation stood behind Saul, a man that eventually was going to be rejected of God and go to hell because he was the popular guy, because he was popular. And, you know, again, that's one of the things I've seen over the years in the churches, at the conventions, so forth. There seems to be no exception to it, is that many times that there's a ringleader, there's the one individual that everybody looks to. And if that person does well, then they do well. If that person does bad, then they do bad. You know, friends are a huge factor. I want to look with you at Proverbs chapter 13. In Proverbs chapter 13, it speaks somewhat concerning this, and I want to apply this here. In Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 20, it says this, "He that walketh with wise men shall be wise." But the second part of the verse says, "But a companion of fools will be destroyed." A companion of fools. Now, you know, we want to balance this out. I mean, maturity comes with age, right? Is that a pretty obvious statement? Maturity comes with age. And so the scriptures tell us the older you are, the more prone you are to thinking things through. And when you're younger, you don't always think things through. So we're not just talking about the silliness of youth. I'm not calling you guys silly. You understand that, right? We'll leave that alone. Because I think my hole is going to get deeper the more I talk. But the thing is this here. I have seen this. I have seen leaders that are foolish, and people attach themselves to those leaders. And when I say leaders, I mean the young people that everyone looks to. You know, people attach themselves to it, and they get carried away in the folly of it all too. And they start doing, you know, nonsensical stuff as well. And they get carried away with it. So a companion of fools, you know, they're destroyed. They get taken off course. I have seen, you know, young people that are flippant and irresponsible become the Sauls. They become the ones that everyone admires and the ones that everyone follows. But, you know, my exhortation to you is look carefully at the friends that you have. Now, I should hope that everybody sitting here in this room would be a good friend to someone else. So we're not talking about you guys not being good friends. But I think that somewhere along the line, you're going to get in a car and go home. And then it's going to be a different scenario. You've got to pick your friends carefully, those that you spend time with there. But the flippant and irresponsible, remember this, that Saul was admired. Saul was handsome. Saul was head and shoulders above everyone else. And yet that man couldn't keep God's commandments to save his life. And people admired him. And people followed him. In Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 9, it says this, He that walketh uprightly walketh surely. He that walketh uprightly walketh surely. There's nothing wrong with having people that you try to emulate. There's nothing wrong with having people, you know, who you want to be like. I mean, I still have people that I want to be like. In fact, I'm struggling to be like my pastor. If I could only be like my pastor, but I don't seem to be making it there, but that's my struggle anyway. So there's nothing wrong with wanting to emulate people. The only point to this message is be careful who you emulate. Be careful of the people you're emulating. Are they people who are walking uprightly? Are they people who care about the commandments? Are they people who care about what the Lord says about them? Or are they just out to have a good time and have a fun time? He that walketh uprightly walketh surely. And it is probably a true statement to say that most people will not rise above their circle of friends. They won't rise above them. And so we have to be very careful. As I've been growing up in the church, I came to the church when I was about 17, as I said, you know, it was my senior year in high school. And I've had to say goodbye to a lot of my friends, people that I love, people that I considered family. And yet when I began to see them and began to see their behavior and began to conclude that their behavior was not appropriate, I had to just break fellowship with them. I'll give you one example. I was invited to a friend's house one time, and, you know, we're sitting there and having dinner and just enjoying our fellowship. And then all of a sudden the conversation began to turn against the leadership. Very simply, very subtly. I didn't do anything about it. I just noted it. I thought, oh, that's strange. That's not really how I feel. And so, you know, as it continued, and you're young in the Lord, you don't really quite know what to do with something like that. So I just kind of noted it. And then as I'm sitting there, all of a sudden, they break out a bottle of wine. And I'm like, okay, that's different. Brother Frank, would you like some wine? No, actually, I wouldn't. I wouldn't like it. Regardless of what your feelings are on wine, I don't want any. No, thank you. In fact, I think I might have quoted to him, wine is not for kings. Okay, so. And then all of a sudden, they kind of began to continue with this attitude towards the leadership. And I began to feel very uncomfortable. And at that night, at that moment, I began to realize that I had to watch these guys. I had to watch them. These were people that I tried to emulate. These were people that I thought, you know, were walking in the ways of the Lord. These were people that I thought were brothers and sisters. And they were at one point. But something was going wrong. And there came a very distinct point in my relationship with them where I had to make a decision. And I had to say, either I keep going with them and buy into this whole thing that they're going down, this whole road they're going down, or I put my foot down and say, no, that's not me. I'm not doing that. And I've had to do that many, many times in my young adult life as I was growing up, because people were getting off the path and turning off the path. People who were head and shoulders above everyone else, people that were popular, people who, you know, began to say evil things about me because I did that. But I am conscious that if I'm going to make it and if I'm going to be upright myself, I've got to surround myself with those who are upright. Otherwise, I'm not going to make it. I understand this concept. Friends matter. They matter. Now, there are the circle of people where you are influencing them for good and you're the one that they want to emulate. That's okay. You know, maybe they're immature. Maybe they're a little wonky in their walk. But then there are those who should know better. And they began to turn to evil works. They began to turn to things that are wrong. And you have to make a choice. You've got to make a decision. Am I going to go down that road just for the sake of friendship? I was in a house one time, one of the most unpleasant experiences of my Christian walk, where 60% of the church was speaking evil of the pastor. And I ended up in the middle of the circle totally by accident. I mean, they were as unhappy to see me there as you could imagine, because they already knew that I didn't go for this kind of thing. And then one by one, they began to speak against the leadership. And I had to stand up in the midst of all of them and say, I don't know what you're doing here, but you can count me out. I don't want anything to do with this. And that day, I said goodbye to 60% of my friends, 60% of my church family. I said goodbye to. I don't want anything to do with that. You know, the companions to fools are destroyed. But he that walks uprightly walks surely. And so there is this component of the friends that we choose. And then the second activity we also brought into this as well, bad activities, right? When somebody's doing something inappropriate, you note it, but maybe you don't do anything about it. You just say, that's strange. Wouldn't have expected that. But as that bad activity continues, you need to find other friends. You need to find other people to emulate, other people to be part of your circle. And I don't mind telling you this. There were some times where there wasn't a whole lot of people for me to hang out with. When God was dealing with the church, when God was exposing sin and God was doing things, I felt like Jeremiah. I sat alone in the congregation. That's okay. That's all right. That's perfectly okay. Because I'm interested in longevity. I'm interested in making it. I'm not interested in just being liked. I'm not trying to promote controversy in the church. All I'm saying is, you may have already faced this, and if you haven't, get ready, because it's coming. You will have to make a decision along that line. And most likely, you'll probably have to make it several times in your life. When somebody steps off the path and begins to go a different direction, I no longer bear an affinity with them. They're no longer walking the way that I want to walk. We're walking on different paths. And we can't, we can't walk together. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 10 says, if sinners entice you, don't go with them. Don't do it. That's a bad choice. That's a bad choice that's going to take us off the path if we're not careful. When sinners entice you, I'm sitting there enjoying my spaghetti dinner, having fellowship with my friends, and they say, oh, by the way, we think Pastor Dan is getting off course and blah, 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 on and on. And by the way, can we fill your glass with wine? No, you can't. What are we talking about here? Something's wrong. It's a bad choice for me to continue that relationship. It's bad. It's a bad activity. I have been astounded over the years. I've been surprised over the years to find out just how bad the activity can be within the confines of the church. Some of the things that people feel are okay to do in the sight of the Lord. Well, you've got to get away from that. You've got to break from that. And then bad attitudes. This is a killer too. This is a big killer here. Bad attitudes. Offenses. I want to speak concerning offenses just a little bit here. An offense. Generally, all offenses are rooted in some form of pride. They're rooted in this concept of, well, they can't talk to me like that. How dare they say that to me? To me. Did you say that to me? You say that to me? You know who I am? I mean, I'm exaggerating here, but that's the idea of an offense. Somebody did something to you that you feel you didn't deserve. And I remember something very, very horrible happened to me one time. It was malicious. It was intentional. I was very upset, as you could imagine. I'm going to the Lord, and I said, can you believe they did this to me? After all we've been through, can you believe that they did this to me? And this is what the Lord spoke to me. He said, forgive them. And I said, well, I'm not going to say no, but I said, what? Forgive them? But didn't you see what they did to me? To me. They did that to me. Did you see that? And this is what the Lord spoke to me. He said, I know just how you feel. He said, because my bride did that to me. Whoa. It changes things a little bit. And then he took me to the story of the man, who owed the steward money, right? And that steward, or that man couldn't pay the steward back, so the steward simply forgave him. And then he went to a man who owed him just a few little farthing, and he wouldn't forgive him, and he threw him into jail. And when the head steward came to him and found out about the story, he said, how is it possible that I forgave you this great debt, and you couldn't forgive this little debt? And then the Lord spoke to me. He said, the worst that anyone can do to you is nothing compared to what they did to me. And I forgave them. So you forgive. That thought has transformed my thinking. When people do stuff now, I don't feel as affected by it. I'm not saying it's not a challenge, but I don't feel as affected by it because I begin to realize something. Well, If God could forgive me the great debt that I owed, the abomination in my life was before I came to Christ, and yet he reached out to me, how can I be offended about something someone does to me? But offenses are one of the things that cause us to make bad choices. And then another problem is rebellion. Rebellion. You know, that was the thing that disqualified Saul. That's an attitude that disqualified Saul. He was rebellious. The Lord actually tells us in Samuel that rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. In God's eyes, it's the sin of witchcraft. That's pretty bad. That's cultish. But rebellion, nobody is going to tell me what to do. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. And you know how many times I've heard that over the years? How many times I've heard it with the young people? Nobody's going to tell me what to do. It's my life. I'll live it the way I want. Well, maybe you don't really know how Christianity works. You were bought with a price. It's not really your life, really, at the end of the day. But, you know, disobedience and rebellion cause people to make bad choices. And so, you know, bad friendships, bad activities, unchristian activities, it's astounded me. It's actually perplexing to me that some people feel as though getting tattoos and body piercing is still a Christian activity. It's a bad activity. And if you're hanging out with people that are doing those things, you need a new group of friends, because that is not Christian activity. Watching unholy programs, flirting with the world, those aren't good friends to have. Those aren't good activities. Bad friends, bad activities, bad attitudes. Well, nobody sets out to be a failure, do they? I mean, you don't go to your guidance counselor in high school and he says, okay, what career path would you like, Mr. Anderson? Well, I was thinking about failure. That would be a good one. Can I do that? Can you guide me down? No, nobody does that, right? Have you ever heard anybody do that? I haven't heard anybody do that. No. What's the path I can go on to be the most successful? And yet, nobody purposely picks failure as a path for their life, and yet people fail. So somehow we have to connect the dots. What is the root cause for all of this? Well, I give you three of them this morning. Bad friends, bad activities, and bad attitudes. Those three things are the recipe for failure. All right? Can we wrap that up now and move on to something more positive? You guys all right with that? Or you want to hear more of the bad stuff? I know the answer to that one. Why do people succeed? Why do people succeed? Pastor Tucker mentioned this morning just a little while ago concerning pastors, a meeting concerning the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord. When we say the word fear, it conjures up certain images, and yet that doesn't really identify what the fear of the Lord is. I mean, it's not terror where, you know, you're horrified of some monster. I don't know. I'm not really afraid of monsters. But anyways, you know, it's not that kind of thing where you're horrified or terrified. It's the kind of thing where you're extremely conscious about how God feels about things. I was in my room some weeks ago, and the Spirit of God came into my room, and I felt the fear of the Lord come into my room. And the only way I can describe it to you was everything that was in my life, I became ultra concerned about to make sure that it was something that God would approve. Again, not terror, not horror, but the spirit of the fear of the Lord causes us to naturally hate evil. And I rooted in a very few seconds, I rooted through my heart and said, what are you doing, Frank? And how does God feel about it? And as this experience, you know, rested upon me, I understood afresh what the spirit of the fear of the Lord is. The spirit of the fear of the Lord is being conscious of what God thinks of you and living your life in such a way that he would be pleased. The spirit of the fear of the Lord is one of the ways that we find good success. There is a verse that actually mentions good success, Joshua chapter 1 and verse 8. Again, this morning, Pastor Tucker was talking concerning the commandments. We are still obligated, if that's the right word to use, perhaps not, to keep God's commandments. They never went null. They never went void. You want to be successful in your walk with God, major on the things that are important to him. When God gave us the Ten Commandments, what he said to us was, these are the 10 most important things that I need you to know. The 10 most important things. So what should be our attitude towards them? They should be our most important things. In Joshua chapter 1 and verse 8, it says, this book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. That thou may observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. Then thou shalt make thy way prosperous. Then thou shalt have good success. Going back to our counselor. Okay, this guy said he wants to be a failure. I don't want that one. I want to be successful. What do I need to do to be successful, Mr. Counselor? Well, keep God's commandments. Write them about the table of your heart. Meditate on them. Study them. And then you'll make your way prosperous. And then you'll have good success. The second thing I want to say is this. I suppose it's the third thing because I'm kind of throwing stuff in there that are in my notes. But the other thing is this. God's will. I can't stress to you, young people, the importance of God's will. But I'm going to try. I can't stress enough, but I'm going to try. When one evening the Lord came, you know, into my room and he took me to heaven. And in heaven, you know, I was standing upon a podium, something like this, and Pastor Bailey was there. I mean, it was before Pastor Bailey passed, but he was in this experience. And as I was in this amphitheater, which I couldn't even see the back of it, it was massive for size, and I understood that we were in heaven. And the Spirit of God spoke to me and he said, prophesy. And I said, Lord, I don't want no one to know what to prophesy. And then my mouth just started to move and these words came out. And these words were, in eternity you'll be measured on two things. The first thing will be, what have you done with God's Son that he sacrificed for your life? What have you done? That will be the very first thing. But the second thing will be, how much of God's will has been fulfilled in your life? How much of God's will has been fulfilled in your life? How much of God's will has been fulfilled in your life? You know, we are not free agents. We can't come and go as we please. We can't just do as we please. We were bought by God with a price. And we are called to glorify God in our lives. And I've gotten to the point anymore that even when I say grace, and Becky can tell me if she remembers me saying this or not, because I know I say it. But even to the point when I say grace, I say, Lord, strengthen us through this meal so that we can glorify your name. Give us strength to build your kingdom. Everything that we do in one way or another is to build God's kingdom. And so when we stand before the Lord, the first thing that's asked us is, what have you done with my son? I feel very sorry for those who have neglected him because they're not going to have an answer for that question. But the second one, which relates more to Christians, is how much of his will versus your will has been fulfilled in your life. It's the second thing. So we want to be prosperous. It's really easy. Just never say no. What's our rule, Becky? Never say no. She was asked to lead songs for her father, so she didn't say no. Although I think in her heart of hearts, she might have wanted to say, there's somebody else probably could do that. But you know, never say no. If you never say no to what God is asking you to do, you'll fulfill God's plan for your life. You will. You absolutely will. It's not as complicated as you might think. If I'm in a place and I'm not sure if I'm fulfilling God's will, I'll ask God. If he doesn't say anything, then I default to the last thing he told me. If I'm doing it, then I'm in his will. I'm doing what he told me to do. Here's another thing. Let what's right versus what's wrong matter to you. Let it matter to you, what's right versus what's wrong. Make it matter. Make it count. Make it important to you. I want to do what's right. I want to do the thing that's right. I want to do the thing that's right. The leaders that I respect the most, that I've worked with throughout the decades, the leaders that I respect the most, at the end of all of the decision process, they ask this question, what's the right thing to do? What is the right thing to do? Because the benefits of doing what is right can't be overstated. Now, I want to bring this to a close this afternoon, to which all the people said, maybe not. I want to bring it to a close, actually switching gears just a wee bit, because it's one thing for me to stand up here after having been in the kingdom for 40-some years, wrestled a few things in my life, had some victories in my life. It's one thing for me to stand up here and say to you, this is what you got to do. You just got to do this. But the question is, you know, Pastor Frank, what was the thing that allowed you to overcome certain things? And I'm not speaking in terms that I've overcome everything. I'm just saying whatever victories I have, what were the causes of those victories? Well, I'd like to say to you, well, you know, I just ate my Wheaties, read my scriptures every day. You know, I was a good boy. And no, none of those things matter. Well, they matter in a certain sense, but no, the only thing that matters is grace. The only thing that matters is grace. You know, you hear a challenging message from the pulpit and you say, I want to do that, but I know it's going to be a struggle. I know it's going to be difficult to do this. I know this is going to face me. I know I'm going to have this problem. I know I'm going to do this, that, and the other. How do I overcome any of these things? And it really is quite simple. Just this one little five-letter word, grace. You know, grace. The real grace, by the way. Not the grace that's being preached right now in different parts of the world where, you know, they just whitewash sin. But real grace. Real grace. In Romans chapter 5, you know, the Apostle Paul's declaration was this. I am what I am because of grace. I am what I am because of grace. And you know, as young people, you know, you've grown up in the church perhaps, all of your lives, you've heard people preaching messages and giving you challenging things to do. And, you know, maybe in your heart you want to do it, and yet you know there's going to be a struggle. What's the secret? The secret is His grace. In Romans chapter 5 and in verse 20, it says, moreover, the law entered that offense might abound, but where sin abounded, grace did much more abound. Where sin abounded, grace did much more abound. Now, the world, the church world, I should say, is trying to sell this bill of goods that grace is simply there to whitewash all of the Christian's misdeeds. And no matter what a person does, Jesus looks down from heaven and He just smiles. He just smiles, whatever they do, because the grace of God. Well, that's nonsense. That is an insult to grace. That's an insult to grace. Because really, where sin abounded, grace did much more abound. And that's the secret. The idea or the concept behind grace is this, that grace is intended to give us the ability to do what we can't do in ourselves. And who does God give the grace to? God gives grace to the humble, to the broken, to those that say, Lord, you know how many times in my life I said, Lord, I don't know if I'm going to make it. That may be the secret to my success, whatever success it is. I don't know if I'm going to make it, Lord. You've got to give me grace. You've got to give me grace. Oh, that was a challenging message. Pastor really cut me up on that one. What am I going to do? I need grace. I need grace. Grace is designed. The grace of God was released, you know, through the life of Christ. The grace of God was released to give us the ability to do what we can't do in ourselves. I was doing a study some time ago, and I came across this definition concerning grace, and I latched right onto it because, to me, this definition best defines grace better than any definition I've ever heard in my life. And if I've preached on it once, I've preached on it 1,000 times. But in the Strong's Concordance, it defines grace this way. It says, the divine influence upon the heart and its reflection in the life. The divine influence in the heart. You know, we were talking about bad friends, right? The problem with bad friends is they're a bad influence. But what about a good influence? What about the Spirit of God being our influence, that divine influence? And you know what I have discovered through my own life is that when I'm confronted with choices, when I'm confronted with challenges, when I'm confronted with just a gut-wrenching trial, I feel, you know, the grace of God pulling me in a certain direction. Now, I can choose to embrace something else, and I can fail of that grace, or I can give myself to that grace. The grace of God may be, perhaps, the greatest secret to success. Keeping God's commandments, studying God's word, you know, meditating on them as Joshua told us, you know, then thou wilt have make thy way prosperous and thou'll have good success. But the application of it's a little bit different, right? It doesn't just say read the book of law, it says and do it. And do it. Well, we all are enclosed with this unruly Adamic nature that says, I don't feel like it. I don't want to do that. And so, you know, there's this conflict that goes on in us. Grace is the advantage. Grace gives us the advantage. That's what grace is for. We don't cry out for grace that says, you know, Lord, you've seen my misdeeds, my misconducts, blah, blah, blah. I'm very sorry, you know, cover me with your grace. Now, Jesus, smile on me. What kind of nonsense is that? And yet, folks, I've been in places where I heard people preach that from the pulpit. No, that's not the idea of grace. Listen, in your young life, you guys are going to face challenges that I never faced. I was thinking about this as I was getting this message together. I thought, you know, how do I put everything into context here? Well, I was looking at history, going back to my parents' history. In my parents' history, what was the negative influence that came upon them? Well, you know, certainly was their friends. But I was thinking in particular of the radio. Now, you guys may think that's a little bit silly. How could a radio be a bad influence? But that was the medium of the day. And they listened to their shows, and the parents rolled their eyes and said, oh, these kids are wasting their time listening to this rock and roll and listening to these worthless skits or whatever. And then in my day, you know, we had TV. And my father used to come into the house, and he would say, he'd come home from work, and he'd see us in there watching the TV, and oh, he would go ballistic. What are you doing? It's a beautiful day. Well, in my day, you know, we went out there picking apples off the ground and cutting trees down, and we were doing all this stuff, and you're sitting there watching TV. Nowadays, it's the internet. And the radio, you had to sit in the living room to listen to it. The TV, you had to sit in the living room to watch it. The internet, I got it with me right now, everywhere I go. That's crazy. You don't think you need grace to master this? You do. You need grace to master this. Grace. And I have it. So I just deleted my Facebook account. I was on in Central America, and I deleted my Facebook account. And I thought, nobody knows I'm on Facebook anyway. Who cares? I go down to Central America. Some of the folks down there, they're kind of avoiding me, which is not typical. I mean, Tino's like me. So maybe I'm deceiving myself. But they're avoiding me. And so I walked up to this one couple that last year when I was down there, they embraced me there. Oh, pray for me, Pastor, on and on. And now they're going on the other side of the room. And I said, I don't want to say what their names are. I said, yeah, come here a minute. I said, how come you didn't come over and say hello to me when I got here? Usually you come right up and say hello. And they said, well, we don't think you like us anymore because you unfriended us on Facebook. And I said, what? What are you talking about? I deleted my Facebook account. I didn't unfriend anyone, or I unfriended everyone, whatever, however you want to look at it. No prejudice here whatsoever. And so everywhere I went in Central America, I had to stand from the pulpit and explain to people I deleted my Facebook account so they wouldn't think I was upset with them. I'm not really sure why I use that illustration anyway. The point is this here. You guys have challenges that I didn't face. All I had to worry about was my father coming and hollering at me because I'm sitting in the living room watching TV on a sunny day. But you guys can take the internet into the privacy of your room, into the privacy of your home. You can be, you know, you can go throughout the whole internet without much accountability at all. That's the temptation that you face. If that doesn't require grace, I don't know what does. Especially when you're trying to embrace God's commandments, you know, you're just filled with all kinds of things, innocently even, advertisements and so forth. I mean, it's just an incredible thing. And so you're saying, well, we go to the youth meeting. Pastor says we ought to do that, which is right in the eyes of the Lord. I agree with it. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get all of this crazy advertisement in your email. I didn't have to deal with that when I was your age. There was no internet, by the way, when I was your age. You realize that, right? No internet. There was no internet. So what's grace for? When sin did abound, grace did much more abound. And to whom does God give grace? God gives grace to the humble. God gives grace to the broken. I'm going to leave you, really is my final verse. The only one smiling is Becky because she knows I don't usually keep my word. Did I say that out loud? No. All right. It is going to be my final verse, though. I promise. Why are you laughing, Becky? All right. I will say this here. I had different challenges when I was your age. I'm 56 years old now, so you can calculate what kind of challenges I had when I was your age, way, way back, you know, when the dinosaurs roamed the earth. But I discovered this verse in Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 7. And you know what? This verse, let me say this correctly. This verse has been the conduit for me. It's been the conduit of grace throughout my entire Christian walk. It's been the conduit of grace. You remember I said earlier, the secret to my success is I weep well? I'm not kidding. When I'm behind closed doors and I feel the conviction of the Holy Ghost, I weep. And I say, oh God, break this. Oh God, break this. But in Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 7, it says, who in the days of his flesh, when he'd offer up prayers and supplication with strong crying and tears on him that was able to save him from death and was heard and that he feared. This idea of Christ being born a man, facing the temptations of a man, he frequently went into his prayer closet and with strong cryings and tears said, Lord, save me from this death. This verse, for me, has been the conduit of grace throughout my entire Christian walk. I've been praying this prayer since I was 17 years old. That's the secret. That's the secret. And so, with my remaining 35 seconds, let me summarize. People have to put themselves on the right course to be successful. And if people make bad choices, they can't win. They will fail. Now, as we mature and as we grow, we learn how to make better choices and better choices and better choices. You understand that. But the secret to success is, you know, embracing God's commandments and crying out for grace. Amen? Amen. 3, 2, 1. You're dismissed.